Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Welcome back to Angel on Top, a podcast where we watch and discuss every episode of Angel one by one, spoiler free, and in tandem with Buffering the Vampire Slayer. I'm Laura Zach.
And I'm Brittany Ashley. And this week we're watching First Impressions. Stick around until the end of this episode for an original poem written by us through the perspective of Angel, who will hopefully talk about his issues with wearing pink, question mark?
First Impressions was written by Sean Ryan and directed by James Contner. It aired on October 10th, 2000.
This is the one where Angel encounters an amorous Darla in his dreams and Cordelia vows to protect Gunn after she experiences a vision of him in mortal danger.
All I have to say is what an opening. Maybe the best opening so far.
So my one issue with the opening is that we don't even get to see what Lauren is talking about. We don't get to see Angel performing Send in the Clowns and Tears of a Clown. And us not being able to see those performances is kind of criminal.
Yeah, truly. And I'm wondering if they maybe did one take where they had him give it a go.
Yeah. And then they're like, oh, this is like the Irish accent all over again. Yeah. Never mind. It immediately starts with Lauren therapizing Angel. But then Lauren just like walks on stage and busts into Get Here If You Can.
By 1998, Oletta Adams originally sang the song, but Sam Smith did a cover of it a couple years ago. But Lauren can really sing.
Lauren is an incredible musician.
Especially once we see Darla. Darla in the scene. You know, we as an audience are assuming this is a dream, but they do a really good job of blurring that edge. Because when they first start talking, it's implied like they're reuniting. Like, what are you doing here? I killed you. Which, of course, this feels very dreamlike, but it also feels like it could be real and also like you kind of want it to be real.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this reminded me of similarly like the guilt dreams that Buffy would have where she would see Angel or where she would see Faith after she had stabbed her. And it's like this fantasy of righting a quote unquote wrong. Like obviously Angel killed Darla. Obviously Buffy killed Angel. Buffy stabbed Faith. And so in a weird way, it's like your brain trying to heal the thing that you feel guilty about, experiencing a dream reality and how that affects your like actual reality. And if that can change the way that you feel about people or relationships and if that is healing or if that is actually harming you more. Like I remember my first girlfriend who I dated 10 years ago, I had like just these, after we broke up, I had like these series of dreams where we were still together and I would, you know, I'd go to bed feeling like slightly more okay with me and this person ending. And then my dream would have us back together. And then I'd wake up and I'd feel like worse than when I went to bed because I felt like I was like experiencing a false happiness in those dreams. And I was like, fuck, I hate, like it was almost the opposite of what Angel was going through. I was like, I don't want to go to sleep because then I'm going to like be even further down the rung of like getting over this and healing from this.
And also these dreams, they almost play a role of like as if he's having an affair.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, have you told anyone else? No, I just want to keep you all to myself, which is true because he isn't telling anyone that he's having these dreams. So there is this piece of we start to see his desire to be asleep, aka his desire to be back with Darla, affecting his choices in his waking world, which we've never seen before. And there's also never a beat in this episode of him being self-aware that this is like there's something going on, that maybe he is under the power of something.
Totally.
It just seems like, yeah, I think it really kind of kicks open the door a little bit into like insight of the depth of Angel's feelings for Darla,
mm-hmm.
and like his inner world in a way we don't normally get to see. And also this opening scene is so chaste for a sex dream.
Yeah.
I mean, not that it is a sex dream, but it's a amorous love dream.
Mm-hmm.
And it's about like the rest of the room vanishing and dancing to her while Lauren sings karaoke to them.
Yeah. Those sound like my sex dreams. But then Angel wakes up and he definitely needs to change those sheets.
Oh, Brittany.
What? Because he slept on them for 3 weeks.
That's fair.
So
they're dusty.
Fun fact, the title First Impressions is a reference to the Jane Austen novel Pride and Prejudice, which was originally named First Impressions.
No way.
Yeah. Just as in this episode, the novel is about two very different people who come to revise their first impressions of each other after spending some time together, obviously, which is in reference to Gunn and Cordelia.
How honored Jane Austen would have been to know that one day her work was going to be so often modeled, including in the great hit Angel.
Yeah.
And we get Cordelia, second episode in a row, dropping into some uncomfy gender roles. Last week, we saw her serving up the tea and blood. This week, we see her doing all the cleaning.
Yeah, like officially moved into the hotel. And rather than hiring a cleaning crew, apparently it's Cordelia's job to clean this place after she probably needs to like go home and clean up her own apartment because they used it as their office for a while.
And as we'll see soon, it doesn't seem like she really is savvy with her taxes. So she probably didn't even know she could have been writing off her rent the whole time.
Oh, totally. So then Gunn comes in impatient because Angel is late, which honestly, I get it. Whenever I have plans with someone to rough up a snitch and they're in their amorous sleep dream about their sire that they killed, I'm like, come on, Laura, again? Seriously? Respect
my
time.
The parallels in this episode to our dynamics are wild.
But then out of nowhere pops little David Nabbit.
Yeah, this is a reoccurring character that I don't know that like really hooks for me why we really need him there. I feel like every time he's there, I expect it to become a bigger thing. And then it's just like, nah, just for that scene. Is there something, do you know if there's something about this specific actor that Joss was just like?
Well, I think we talked about it on the episode, what was it, She? Where he was supposed to be a larger character, but then something like didn't line up with the schedule or something.
But again, that happened? Is the schedule just, come on, get it together, David. Yeah. It just felt like, okay, what did this scene serve? It showed that like he's, you know, it was a little bit of comedic relief, I guess, if you find him funny. No judgment if you do. And it was also like establishing that Angel needed financial advice and establishing that Cordelia gets horned up for tax talk.
Okay, I think it also established, remember when they're at the party, when Cordelia and Gunn are at the party and she's like, are you friends with every criminal in town?
White collar crime.
Yeah, like the perception of white collar crime versus, you know, like.
That's fair. It's for Gunn, I guess, for Gunn to bear witness this character who's in their life and how different he is from like the people that Gunn is usually dealing with.
Yeah.
Like what different worlds they come from.
Yeah. And like the whole line of like, this isn't how we do business, and showing how like Angel treats, you know, people who he's trying to do business with, i.e. financial advisor David Nabbit, and how Gunn does business, which is just entirely different, and trying to like separate those two worlds and how they handle it.
Okay.
I suppose.
I see you and I respect the analysis hustle.
Yes. But then we also obviously see what I believed the last time we saw David Nabbit, which you pointed out is that, yeah, Cordelia's hot for that DN, that David Nabbit.
But only when he's talking about money.
She was excited to see him even before when he came in even just like wielding his sword and shit. Like, I think that she's actually kind of into it. If this would have been a longer arc, I would have seen Cordelia being into him and I probably would have been into it in a weird way.
Yeah, there's something like when you can, I think I'm interpreting him from a very 2019 perspective when we are in the era of incels. Mm. And I feel like there's something about him that's like incel adjacent to me.
Oh, I don't think so. He reminds me of, what I was about to say was actually comparing him to someone who we could maybe describe as like incel adjacent, which I was going to say he reminds me of Jonathan.
Exactly. That gets explored maybe.
All right. I see your point.
You know, this scene as a whole is also establishing the intense tension between Cordelia and Gunn specifically.
And not sexual.
No, just tension. And yeah, throughout this episode, there's a whole lot of problems. There's a lot of racist comments that are going to be in moments being slung. There's a lot of sexist comments nonstop from Gunn toward Cordelia. Any opportunity he has to downplay Cordelia's abilities or capability with like a misogynistic quip or calling her Barbie or whatever it is will happen.
The writers are trying to make it incredibly clear that these two people, even though they're doing similar work, they have incredibly different perceptions of one another and their abilities. Given like what we know about Gunn's working relationship with Angel, I think he is rightfully irritated.
Absolutely.
That he's working for someone who's on like their own chaotic schedule and Gunn has other things to be like. We haven't spoken about payment at all. Like, he's not even getting paid.
Yeah, all the free labor he's doing, but also he's not working for Angel. They have a partnership,
right?
And he rightfully calls Angel out and being like, "You come to me and expect me to jump in that moment many times," and we've seen that happen in countless episodes. And now Gunn has asked for Angel's help. Not only has he asked for his help, they've set a time. They've made an appointment to like take on a deem together. So it's not even like, "Hey man, I need you to drop everything you're doing." It's like, "Hey, would it be cool if you penciled in tomorrow at 4 to go check out this DVAC situation with me?" And Angel's just like taking his sweet time. And, you know, he does take it seriously. Like, he does get up and he is like, "I want to take my whole team." But yeah, definitely they frame it so that Gunn's feelings are justified here. Back in DTLA, I feel like we've been in this parking garage or whatever this is many times in the show.
Yes. So they are talking to Gunn's snitch contact, Jameel, about DVAC's whereabouts. But Jameel changes his mind, doesn't want to tell him anything. So Gunn, the way that he does business is he roughs people up for them to tell him what he needs to know. But Angel, Cordelia, and Wesley are like, "Sorry, this isn't how we do business."
Which isn't true. Angel, we see Angel do it later in this very episode with the vampire coming out of the party who's pretending to be just a normal girl.
Right. Like, well, like one of the kind of like holes in it is that, well, perceived mortal.
Well, both of them are perceived mortal.
Right.
Turns
but
out.
If Angel can like sniff out when someone isn't mortal, he should have been able to sniff this out, obviously. But he
right.
didn't.
There's holes in both directions. Yes, Angel absolutely
holes in both directions.
Okay. Angel absolutely has used rough tactics before to get information that he needs if the stakes are high enough, which they are high enough for Gunn. Angel just is sort of like,
he wants to be back in his bed, baby.
Yeah, let's be real. He's not, his head is not in the game.
No. His head is in
Brittany.
What? His head is in the clouds. Clouds is in Darla's boobs.
Oh,
all right.
Oh my God.
So now a bunch of vampires come out of the woodwork because they follow Jameel, as like he said would probably happen. Cordy stakes a vampire. Like, there are some little good things that come out of this fight, but then we do a weird cut to just piles of dust and they're all pretty much down for the count. And Gunn is like amped up and he's like, "Let's go find everything else." But I think it's also to point out the fact that Angel, who would generally also be able to like heal quickly and would also be like moving on to the next thing, is just as exhausted as Cordelia and Wes. And that is obviously like a red flag in terms of what's going on with Angel.
And the scene also has takes us on a little journey through cinema.
And we find out that Angel is a Denzel Washington fan.
So when they get back to the hotel, Angel wants to jump right back into his sweet little bed. And we all know why.
Yeah, he's like, my eyelids are heavy. I better get some shut eye. Bye, Cordelia. Come pick me up later. And she's like, it's 7 o'clock.
Good to know this demon is still out harassing people. Mm-hmm. But no worries. I just need a napsie. And Cordelia is home chatting with Cutie Dennis about the temperature. It seems like they've really found like a copacetic way of coexisting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's very respectful of her. He, you know, puts up the heat when she asks. And then she starts to have a vision. And in this one, she's seeing Gunn.
Yeah, and she's seeing Gunn, like, wave around what kind of looks like David Nabbit's sword and just, like, in a dark void. And that's all we see. We don't see anyone else. But the worst part is that she dropped her coffee mug. See, these are the invisible expenses of having a prophecy-related condition that nobody's talking about.
Again, she could be writing this off. Every time she buys a new thing that might break when she's having a work-related vision, write that shit off.
Yes. But then when she's like, Dennis, phone, and the phone just like whips into her hands. And honestly, I think that if every fight took place in Cordelia's home, she would be like a superhero because she can like just hold out her hand and be like, Dennis, knife. And then she'd have like a knife in her hand. Like she's like Magneto in a weird way.
Also, Dennis could just be fighting people as well.
True.
Yeah.
Slamming doors in their face. Ah, kitchen cabinets in their face. Love this.
I hope there's a scene like that.
Yeah, I wouldn't count on it.
Okay.
So, yeah, Angel's asleep because he's on a sunless little beach engaging in some kinky ice cube play with his deceased sire.
This episode, I kept waiting for the other shoe to drop with Darla.
Boy, does it drop.
Well, yeah, it sure does. But I guess I mean, I keep waiting for her to turn more explicitly sinister in the actual moments. Like I keep waiting for her to like actually attack him or like that's what it feels like it's going to. Like this feels too good to be true. And obviously it is. But within this episode, she just stays sweet. Of course, like we understand that it's
some could say
loaded.
That's more sinister.
I agree. It's more sinister, but it was very effective because it made me feel like if this was the version of Darla that was all the time, I could understand why Angel would be like consumed by her.
Yeah.
Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, it was effective. You know, like when you're in a dream and your alarm goes off and in the dream, it sounds like your alarm is going off. They do that really well in this where the phone is ringing in Angel's dream. And obviously we see that in reality, Cordelia is trying to call Angel and he's not answering and he's ignoring it in the dream as well because Darla's telling him to. And then
but the fact that Darla's telling him to is the first moment we get. We suspect this, but this is when we get confirmation that Darla he's not dreaming Darla. Darla is manipulating a situation.
Yes.
She is purposefully distracting him from his real life
mm-hmm.
and trying to keep him with her.
Cordelia can't get a hold of Angel. She can't get a hold of Wesley. And so she decides she's going to see where Gunn is herself. And then she's like, okay, I'm going to die.
I love that moment.
Yeah.
Where she's like, oh, crap, I need a weapon. Gets an axe. I was hoping it was going to be the crossbow.
Yeah.
But when she rolls up to Gunn's, unfortunately, she mistakes what's going on and she ends up hitting on the head with an axe, just one of Gunn's co-patriots.
Yeah. And then he's just like,
okay.
Fine. Everyone
just takes a little bandage.
Everyone laughs and nobody's asking this guy if he's okay, even though he got hit in the head with a fucking axe. Later, when D-Beck gets hit in the head with the same axe.
You want to know what happens?
He dies.
He dies.
Yeah.
And he's a big, strong Deem.
Yeah. Then we're back into this dreamlike state again with Angel.
Oof.
And honestly, like, despite the murdery backstory, they make a very beautiful couple. And you see Angel smile. I mean, you see Angel smile so rarely. Like, you've only really seen him, like, with like that way with Buffy when he turns into, like, a little boy.
What do you make of this moment where she is saying that she's in danger?
I think she's playing into Angel's natural inclination to protect people that he loves or just people who are in danger. And then later she, like, manipulates it to be like, you're always the protector, but never the protected. I'm going to protect you. I think it's, like, weirdly, like, shifting. She knows that he will want to protect her. And then when they get closer, then she's able to be, like, manipulate that same fact in a way.
And this time, Wesley is in his house trying to wake him up by hammering on... Was that a coffin? Literally last episode. Wasn't it last episode when Cordelia is like... Well, no, it was this episode.
No, so I think that that was the dream. I think in reality, he was banging on the door. In reality, he was banging on...
But why would a coffin even be in his dream? Literally this episode, Cordelia had said to Gunn, like, yeah, you dumb idiot, they don't sleep in coffins.
Yeah, right. But I mean, I think that's also to show us that that, like, wasn't...
Real.
Real. Yeah, I mean, I've had dreams where, like, me and Ashley Simpson are in the Air Force. That makes no sense, but it happened.
I know, it just seems a little bit on the nose for... It would be like if we as lesbian people had a dream about ourselves wearing Birkenstocks going to Home Depot. You know what I mean? It's like, it would be like us having, like, a dream of ourselves in the, like, stereotype.
That sounds like an incredible dream.
Honestly, I was about to say that, but then it was going to hurt my point. Yeah. Let's just move on.
But then Angel, like, this is where the line between reality and dream starts to fuck up, because Angel starts to, like, choke Wesley out and is like, you made her go away. You made my naughty dream stop. He has to stop himself because he realizes that it's no longer a dream. You can't just choke people in reality. And then we also find out that Angel was naked this whole time.
Which, I don't mean to be crass, but based on that dream, I feel like there's a chance he may have been in a state. A state. His body may have been in a state. So.
I just wanted to see how far he'd go. But he just kept repeating the same thing. And so now Gunn and Cordelia, this is where he starts to be kind of a dick to her and is saying, you know, referring to her as a skinny white beauty queen and doesn't see Cordelia for, you know, the whole person that she is, which is this totally capable, smart, badass. He like, basically, he only hears the first jingle, but he never even realized there was a second jingle. You know what I'm saying?
Totally. But at the same time, in his defense, thus begins a little bit of what feels like a white savior storyline. Which I think goes more deeply, like, when we get to this party that we are going to, which is mostly people that Gunn knows from the neighborhood. It's mostly people of color. And Cordelia is not great.
No.
She even makes a sort of, like, these people type comment about, like, how many criminals Gunn knows when it's just him saying hello to black people.
Yeah.
And then when he pushes back on that, she says, well, aren't they? She, like, doubles down. Yeah. And there's just a whole, like, her going into the party being like, oh, parties. I'm amazing at parties. Like, I'm going to shine. And then as soon as she sees that there's, like, no white people there, she's like, ooh, like, kind of like, never mind. I take it back. I guess I'll just stay with you. Like, there's this. Yeah, I think both of them are really expressing their worst and best selves and in this episode. They're both sort of like, I said what I said.
They both have some learning.
Blind spots.
Yeah, they both have some blind spots for sure. But it was surprising that Gunn had some misogynistic ones considering, I mean, I hate to say, like, as the brother of a sister.
He had a sister.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess he was kind of like Alana's protector in a way. So he might not have seen how, like, capable she was as a woman.
Right. And in some ways, she was her most powerful only when she was a vamp.
Now Cordelia and Gunn's mission is to figure out who stole Angel's car. On this drive to this impound where this guy named Henry that Gunn knows works and knows about cars that have been stolen, Cordelia is all like, I'm your protector. And then meanwhile, Wesley has to pick up Angel on the back of his motorcycle. And he gives Angel a pink helmet. And wow, masculinity is so fragile for Angel.
Yeah, even for the immortal ones.
And I love Wesley being like, it's the law, Angel. You have to.
Wesley is brilliant in this scene until the moment that he says, get on, gorgeous. Although right. I do like it because, you know, you could read it as him just playing off of Angel's insecurities and having a go at him.
Mm-hmm.
But I really feel like Wesley does not give a shit.
Then Gunn and this guy Henry get into an altercation. And at first I was like, oh, this actor who's playing Henry is not good. Like everything feels very written and very expository and very on the nose. But then you realize that he is playing a guy who is acting. Like he is, mm-hmm. because Henry is doing this for DVAC, you realize that the reason everything is coming off so unnatural is because he is acting. And I was like, oh, brava, brava.
But at the same time, I think of, did you watch Orphan Black at all?
I did not.
Oh, you should.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel like you'd like it. But Tatiana Maslany has to play 6 different characters that all have very distinct characteristics, accents, backgrounds, personalities. And there are certain scenes where she is one of the characters pretending to be another one of the characters who has a different accent. And like there are ways that she incorporates all of that like complexity.
Whoa.
Without while still seeming good at acting. You know what I mean?
Sure, yeah.
Like I like your interpretation, but I also think it's giving this guy a lot of credit.
That's fair.
But he's not Tatiana level, let's just say.
He's no Tatiana. But we also see that Gunn really cares about keeping his neighborhood safe. Like he is kind of like the neighborhood watch person where he's like, if you want to go steal convertibles in Brentwood, be my guest. But you don't steal from the people who live in this neighborhood because we're all in this together.
Right. There's a survivalist code of ethics, like recognizing that a lot of what would be considered, quote, criminal is actually about survival.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to mitigate like the damage to the community from within the community, like trying to preserve the community and not like stealing from one another.
Right. And obviously like committing crimes because you have to survive is something that Cordelia, like someone like Cordelia, given her comments that she made, it's not something that she can understand because she just probably interprets people committing crime as people like consciously wanting to do moral bads. You know what I mean? Even though her father was a white collar criminal.
Mm-hmm.
He did these like financial crimes, which is also really interesting that she's attracted to David, by the way. It is kind of like a daddy issue
Freudian
thing. But her interpretation of why people commit crimes is coming from a place of not having ever been to the level of what other people are, not having to do these things to survive. Like, even though she was at her, like, most broke in this series, she still had her own apartment and she still attended this, like, lavish party where she, like, had all the, like, where she was, like, bringing home all that food.
There
you know what I mean?
There were still layers and layers of privilege, like, because of her background and her whiteness that, like, are not going to prevent her from ever experiencing the level of, like, what Gunn's friends are used to.
Yeah. So before we get to this party, let's do a little ad from our sponsor.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. You can shop from anywhere doing pretty much anything. You might shop while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast. And however you shop, we all know and love the thrill of the hunt. But do you also know how to get the thrill of the best deals? Because Rakuten shoppers do. With Rakuten, they get the deals they love with the most savings and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Sephora, Nike, and even Expedia if you're looking to get some travel in. And getting cash back doesn't mean you have to miss out on sales because those can just be stacked right on top. It's easy to use and based on a simple idea. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back through PayPal or check. Download the free Rakuten app and never miss a deal. Or go to Rakuten.com to start getting the most bang for your buck. That's R-A-K-U-T-E-N.
So now they're at this party, and Laura, as you pointed out before, Cordelia was like, oh, a party? I don't need you to tell me how to blend into a party, baby, because partying is what I do. And then she has a really muddy conversation about sex work with the woman that Gunn seems to have like a casual flirtation with.
Oh, yeah. A lot of like putting her foot in her mouth, overcompensating, like implying at first that she maybe thought Veronica was a sex worker, but then saying she knows that there's nothing wrong with sex work if she were one. It's just like a very awkward worst case scenario type for, again, first impression to make on Veronica, who already is a little bit like, it's clear that she has history with Gunn and is a little bit like, who's this woman
right
with Gunn? So not the best.
Yeah. So then some vamps attack that party and a piece of glass goes into Veronica's neck after one of the vampires pushes her into a glass window. And I thought, so like, you know how the glass went right into her neck, kind of perfectly where a vampire would bite a mortal. I thought that there was going to be some confusion between like them thinking that she got bit by a vampire.
Oh, and that she was going to turn.
Yeah. I felt like that was leaving a gun on the table. A gun on the table. Veronica's obviously hurt. They need to rush her to the hospital. And when we're at the hospital, Gunn says something that really gives insight into his interior world and his, you know, his motivations for why he does what he does. As he says, someone like Alana pays the price. Cordelia obviously realizes in this moment is that he is still feeling incredibly guilty for the fact that his sister died by a vampire and that he wasn't able to save her. And so that's why he is doing what he's doing. That's why he's so serious all the time. That's why he's kind of controlling. It's because he is trying to prevent this from happening again. And he's like, he's kind of doing in a way what Angel's doing as well, which is he's on like this redemption arc where he's trying to remedy the past, even though there's nothing he could have done. You know what I mean? Like he's definitely feeling guilty when he doesn't need to. But I get it. Grief, baby.
Speaking of which, I heard you're going to be speaking at Middlebury College in Vermont about grief.
I sure am. Yeah, if anyone is near Middlebury College.
It's just pronounced Middlebury.
Middlebury. Stay tuned because I will be giving a talk about grief. It'll be fun.
So proud of you.
Oh, thanks, dude. Fuckwatch.
On that note. I went on a journey this episode as well. I had one pick, then I had another, but I'd kind of like to hear yours first and I'll take you through it.
Well, at first I was like, if I pick a dream reality version of someone, is that still picking them? And I realized because reality and dream are so blended together, it probably would. So I decided not to pick Darla this time around. And then I thought about picking Desmond because he has excellent taste in cars and I would probably get like a convertible or two.
He was also really cute.
He was adorable.
Yeah.
But then I went with my gut and my gut was Lorne because he's so talented.
So dreamy in the
He set. Was also like, he was multitasking. He was doing it like he was therapizing Angel and helping him through something while also complimenting him, and then instantly walks a step and fucking belts out a song. How talented.
Gloriously.
Yeah. I also felt a self-assured person.
I also felt like that scene at the beginning between he and Angel must have been, my guess is they probably laughed a lot while they were filming it.
Yeah.
Like when he was just like, hey man, what happens to your heart, you know? Just because it's not beating doesn't mean it can't break. Like there was just a lot of like ridiculous isms that felt like he could be a guest on this podcast.
He sure could have.
Yeah. He would have loved to talk about vulnerability with us. He's one of the ones, and I have a couple characters this season that I feel this way about, both Lauren and Darla, namely, that I feel like it feels like so intense when I want to pick them because I don't want to like ruin my chances at a
So is this technically like Dream Lorne or is this Lorne?
No, I don't think we can do the dream and reality thing.
Fine, Laura. Lorna.
Oh, man. If I could pull together the special effects makeup in time, that would be an incredible Halloween costume. Lorna.
What if
I do like the full face?
What if we made a t-shirt or a pin that said, I'm horns for Lorne's? Or I'm horns for Lorne?
Let's workshop.
I've got horns for Lorne.
Horns for Lorne. Horns for Lorne is kind of cute.
Yeah.
Let us know what you think on Twitter or in the comments. When I say the comments, I mean just tweet at us.
Yeah.
All right. So my journey was actually very similar. Mm. My first instinct was to pick Darla. I wasn't going to make the distinction between dream or life, but I was going to say part of the reason I was drawn to her and thought maybe I should pick her now is because I wanted to preserve the version of her that she is in dream. Sure. Like I'm attracted to this version if what she was showing Angel was actually true.
Mm.
Like so present, so emotionally available, like so caring.
But see, Laura, this is what you do sometimes where
I know
you only see people for their best qualities and you are blind to the ways
what's really going on.
It is not compatible or it can't work.
Yeah, this is completely true. It felt like it would have been dipping back into an old pattern that I've been trying to break.
Yeah.
I resisted that, even though, you know, the fantasy of it was so appealing as it always is and as it was for Angel. I felt very sympathetic with Angel in that, or empathetic in that case. But ultimately, I decided that my pick for this episode is Wesley.
Aww.
In the scene of the helmets.
Scene. Yeah.
Because I just loved how, first of all, he owns that helmet. And I don't think, I'm choosing to believe that it's not just in case he has a lady guest. I think that he is that confident in himself. He doesn't buy into gender essentialist bullshit. He looks hot in pink, I bet. Like, I think that's just his spare helmet. Aww. That he chooses to have.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way he kind of like confidently lets Angel squirm and is just like, what seems to be the problem? You know, like, I feel like I gained insight into especially coming off of last episode where he was so insecure and you wanted to pick him because he was insecure. I want to pick up this episode because I feel like we're seeing his security, the ways that he's actually like more comfortable in himself than Angel is.
Yeah. Watch. Cordelia and Gunn finally get to Angel's convertible and she realizes that she does not have the keys because she left them in the car. And
Oopsie.
So it did make it easier for Desmond to steal the car.
It doesn't mean it was okay.
Right. Yeah, right. Sure. Even though Cordelia played a huge role in saving Veronica's life, Gunn still says, "You're one high maintenance chick, you know." And it's like, okay, buddy, she truly just like saved your friend's life. But then D-Vac.
But also he's not wrong.
Right. But then D-Vac shows up with Cordelia's keys. And then he says some heteronormative bullshit where he's like a woman willing to die for her man. And it's like, okay, how dare you assume that they're together just because they're a man and a woman?
Also, how dare you assume they're straight?
Yeah, that they would like be together. And then D-Vac lifts Gunn up by his little throaty. And turns out, surprise twist, it was Jameel. I was legitimately surprised.
I was as well. And I also, not only is it Jameel, he's much better dressed as a human.
Yeah.
He goes from wearing like literal like rags with holes on them, like a potato sack, to Jameel's normal outfit.
Yeah.
Her mace, Cordelia's mace, comes out, which Gunn had made fun of earlier, but it ends up saving him in this moment. She sprays him. And I know you haven't watched Game of Thrones, but I think that Game of Thrones viewers will recognize this moment of like the choking in midair. It was very similar to when the White Knight had Arya in his grasps just before her death kill. Sorry about the spoilers if you haven't seen GOT.
So then Wes and Angel fly in and Wes practically ghost rides the bike. We couldn't tell if it was intentional for him to like try and hit the vampires with the bike or if he just is a very clumsy driver. But we'll make it seem as if it was intentional. And they're all holding their own this time around. Cordelia and Wesley are fighting really well. Angel uses that pink helmet for good. And then Gunn is about to get stabbed when Angel does a flying somersault, catches Cordy's axe midair, and stabs D-Vac to save Gunn's life.
That choreography, that fight choreography.
It would have been so much better if they had Cordelia do that.
I know. All Cordelia got to do is like knee a guy in the balls.
Yeah, and like throw an axe.
Yeah, especially because Wesley and Angel came in so last minute. They're very like, okay, we're here. Maybe if we hadn't argued for so long about the helmets, we would have been here saving you sooner, but...
Then when Gunn is like, well, you finally saved my life, Cordelia, I guess I should say thanks. It's like, does he believe that because Cordelia had the axe, what part does he believe Cordelia saved his life?
I think maybe it's a little bit of her prophecy coming to fruition and just the fact that she has stood by him for the duration of this episode. I assumed it was sort of cumulative. And technically, you know, her team is an extension of her. So she did. She's the one who rallied Wesley and Angel to come and was with him physically the whole time. But then they have this exchange where she clicks into Esther mode.
Oh, she sure does.
And I was confused.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of came a little, like, I saw the pieces of, like, you know, when he shows.
Well, first of all, what she says is right. She's essentially like, so it turns out, you know what? There was no monster in my vision. The danger was you. You're on a self-destructive path. And
you're fighting your own demons, man. Your inner demons.
And, you know, unless you get some help, it's going to take you down. And it's like, okay, back up, Cordelia. There's no monster? Then why the H-E double hockey sticks did you rush
you
into
can say
his
hello.
Building? Why the fucking H-E double hockey sticks did you run into his building and hit that guy over the head with an axe?
Right. It's like, did she piece this all together secretly that, like, okay, so it wasn't that guy. It wasn't D-Vac. Actually, it was him.
All along.
Fighting his own demons. All. Yeah, it kind of like came out of nowhere.
She just seemed suddenly like her whole arc when she first approaches Gunn is very kind of in this panicked, like, danger could be around any corner. I got to be here with you because, but then it's like she has this like wisdom
right.
that doesn't necessarily feel earned in the episode.
Yeah.
It could be based on what she observed that episode.
Right. It, like, if she really believed that he was on a self-destructive mission, she would have maybe tried to help him in a different way. Like, she would have taken a different approach.
And she's all like, I hope you plan on having me in your life a while, at least until you find some peace. And again, yikes, a little bit of a white savior situation, but also, you know what?
I chose to interpret it as she lost someone. She lost Doyle last season, who was very important to her, and he lost Alana. And so she is almost like becoming his like grief doula. That's the way that I interpreted it.
Ooh, grief doula. Into it.
Then Angel Dream Sequence.
Oh
boy.
This one.
So this was actually like, this actually looked like it could have been reality because he is exhausted, like coming back in through the hotel. She's there waiting at like the reception area. And a part of me when I watched it was like, oh, this is going to be real. And he has lost sight of what is reality and what is dream.
Right.
But then it, you know, it turns out it was a dream. Also, like, it's interesting because in the previous scene, Cordelia is like, aren't you going to thank me? And Gunn like doesn't thank her, but shows her like a sign of solidarity, of like a smile of like, I'm not going to say thank you, but like, thank
you. Yeah.
Whereas Darla is almost like tapping into that in an opposite way by saying, you saved more lives, but did any of your friends thank you? No, they didn't. You're always the protector, but you're never the protected. Like, you do so much for other people. And now let
Takes care of you, baby?
Yeah, let mama take care of you. And
And then she climbs on top of him.
Yeah, she climbs that tree.
And we see Angel smiling in his sleep. And there is a Darla on top of a sleeping angel. IRL. So it's quite a cliffhanger. And this made me really eager to check out the next couple episodes, because when that moment happens where he realizes this has been real all along, like, that's not going to necessarily negate the very real feelings he's been having.
Right.
Like, is he going to feel these like conflicted feelings toward her while clicking back into antagonistic mode?
Right. And like, obviously Darla knows where he lives. Obviously Darla can enter into the hotel. Like, there are just like, logistically, she now knows what is going on in his world while also working for Wolfram and Hart.
But what's her tactic? Is she trying to genuinely woo him back to her side?
I guess we're gonna have to figure it out.
All right, let's do that.
Detective Angel.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Angel on Top. I'm Brittany Ashley, and you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Brit27Ash, or you can check out my website, BrittanyAshleyFunny.com, for all my stuff.
And I'm Laura Zach, and you can follow me on Twitter at Lawa or on Instagram at Laura Zach. I also have a website, LauraZach.com. Haven't updated that puppy in a minute, but that's where you'll find my stuff as well.
You can follow Angel on Top on Instagram and Twitter at Angel on Topcast, and you can email us at angelontoppodcast@gmail.com. And don't forget about that costume contest, friends.
And now, please enjoy the poem for First Impressions from Angel's point of view. First Impressions. In slumber rendezvous with my sultry maker, I feel more alive than when waking. Forbidden love cherished but only in secret, my heart does not beat, but it's breaking. I take time to rise for my promised duties, addicted to this dangerous flirtation. Real life's demons need attention, and I will take the whole team despite guns' protestations. DVAC informant gets cagey at confrontation. Gun resorts to his fist, then we're mobbed. We may not agree on vamp takedown tactics, but when it comes to Oscars, Denzel was robbed. Home sweet hotel, and I'm back in bed. Only my nocturnal beloved knows why. Poolside, but in darkness, under her erotic grip. What's that ringing? She says, ignore it. I comply. Ice is melting on my pectorals. Dreamscape defies my waking morals. Wes pulls me from moments sacred. I'm not exposed, but I'm definitely naked. Not much penetrates my cleft perspective, not even a vanishing car. Gender essential bias delays our departure. Let's admit it, today Cordy's the star. Once we get to the kegger, a vamp feigning frailty, a headbutt should get her to spill. Deus ex machina, except it's me and Deem Hunter, screeching in just in time for the kill. Sweet relief, back with Darla, debriefing my day. She's the only one who sees me wholehearted. Let me live in fantasy, let her eat me right up. Her promise, baby, we're just getting started.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Get inspired while learning all about the unique planes of existence. Get the in-depth knowledge you need to help your combat encounters feel impactful, or learn about the origins and pantheons of every race and class the game offers. No stone is left unturned as every edition of the game is explored and explained in a way that benefits players of all different levels of experience. You can expand your TTRPG horizons in a way that's as entertaining as it is educational just by listening. All you have to do is go to your favorite podcast app or YouTube and search for The Dungeon Cast.